This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Back with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick Maher. We'll see Patrick back on the show tomorrow. Real quick, Michael, just an update from the league here. Mike Evans officially ruled out for week three. That appeal of the suspension upheld by the league. So he will be out. We saw that that was released here in the past hour, and this line has continued to tick down. So Green Bay now is catching a lot of the money here. Bucks only favored by a point or point and a half. So I know we were kind of wondering about that, figured he'd be out, but now you have it. That's the official word there in Tampa for week number three. You've also got a bunch of other teams. Yeah, Michael, go ahead.
I mean, look, there was a reason Brady was practicing. I mean, you know, he knew that appeal had zero chance of going through, right? So – you know, that's why you got to get out there, get some reps with these guys. They're going to be playing in the game against a good Packer defense.
No question. And they see signing Kalen Geiger from the practice squad. It is going to be an interesting wide receiver room by committee there this week, especially if Julio Jones, who's a firm questionable, is unable to give it a go. And while there's a lot of question marks there for Tampa Bay, you also have a lot of these teams too, Michael, who are in the midst of big question marks, just as general teams, 0-2 against the spread or 0-2 just in general here to start things off. Wanted to look at some of these dogs for week three who might have some value in your mind. And a couple of the 0-2 teams now will square off in this Tennessee and Raider matchup. And for us, so much of the focus coming out of Monday night has been on the Bills and how good they've looked. But maybe lost a little bit in the shuffle is just how devastatingly bad Tennessee has looked. Now going back 2 weeks to blowing the game as a 5.5, 6-point home favorite to the Giants in week one. You get run out of the building and a raucous crowd in Buffalo week two. Number one seed in the AFC playoffs a season ago. You're 0-2 this year, Michael. Where do you stand first off on Tennessee and what their personnel looks like after the 0-2 start?
You know, I always give Bill AD my picks for the week on Sunday because and I do two sets of picks. For a guy that doesn't bet, I do way too many picks, right?
But it's okay.
Anyway, so, you know, on Friday I do Russo's show, but by the Sunday, the line shifts so much I have to end up giving three different picks out, you know, because the line changes. And one of the reason I'm telling this sad story is because I gave Tennessee out taking the 10. Man, was I wrong. And I based it strictly on Vrabel's ability to coach the game, to slow the game down. Did I think Tennessee would win? No, I didn't. I really didn't. But I thought he would be able to pace the game in a way to where it would work out for him. And that didn't happen. And now he gets ready to play a Raider team who's 0-2. And he's got Taylor Lewan, his left tackle, who's out. He's got a rookie at right tackle. What I think you see as fans, what we see from Tennessee is, everybody says, well, Tannehill stinks. What we see from Tennessee now is, when Tannehill has players around him, like he did 3 years ago, like Tua has, he looks a lot better. When those players aren't there anymore, all of a sudden he doesn't look so good. And, you know, when they traded decision to trade AJ Brown and they made the decision to, you know, not to, you know, bring back some of their players and have really holes in their draft, it's a problem. And this talent level of the team, which I've never bought to, I really never have. I thought they were good. I thought they're good defensively up front, but I thought their talent level wasn't great. I think now Vrabel can't overcome it. I think he's having a hard time with it, and it's a challenge.
Well, it's funny you mentioned, too, the coaching piece of this, because you're Tennessee, you come home, you're limping back, it's a short week. Both of these teams, Titans and Raiders, all sorts of banged up with a lot of guys questionable on the initial injury reports just coming out today. But you talk about coaching, and you're taking a Raider team that is fresh off of an absolute collapse in a game against Arizona where you led by 20. You ended up holding the ball. Josh McDaniels' team, Michael, 9 minutes, 50 seconds in the second half. They run 19 plays for 90 yards, got incredibly conservative in that game. You give up all sorts of crazy Kyler Murray plays. Where are you at on McDaniels as a coach here? I know we talk about Hackett. We're going to get into him later on in the show, how big of a struggle and a calamity that's been in Denver. But what do you see out of McDaniels here when you look at the 0-2 start there for the Raiders?
Well, you know, look, I mean, my son's the offensive coordinator, so I mean, I'm going to see this through slanted eyes a little bit as you asked me that question. I don't think they were conservative at all. They couldn't convert a third down. They had guys open. They couldn't make a throw, you know, and I think they struggled. I think they made too many mental mistakes offensively, which is part of the coach's job and an obligation to handle that. But to me, I don't think this has anything to do with going conservative. I think Josh and the entire coaching staff knew they needed more than 20 points when they left halftime to score. I don't think they got there and said, okay, we're Petey Corral. We're going to play the Princeton offense and just milk the clock.
Right.
That wasn't it. They just didn't execute. Their execution was poor. Granted, I don't think their play calling was conservative. I mean, and through all that we just talked about, you know, if, you know, when he checks into a play and almost throws an interception to Devontae Adams, if he just throws it to Adams, it's going to be a first down. They're going to kick the field goal, win the game. So, and then they have a chance to win the game in spite of Renfro's first fumble, and he fumbles again, you know, and that cost them. So they got to regroup. I mean, this is the NFL. You got to regroup. But we have a tendency to label things conservative because teams don't move the ball in the second half. Well, the reason they didn't move the ball was more to do to them than it was to do with what was going on, you know, from what they were doing. And I think that's got to be the bigger issue. I think they have to fix that. I think when you look at Derek Carr the first 2 weeks of the season, I had him as a red chip player this summer because he had almost 5,000 yards passing last year, Brent.
Right.
But he's not even nowhere near that. He's missed a lot of throws. He's missed a lot of opportunities, specifically in the red zone. That part of this is when you have a new system and a new place, you got to get yourself on track. I think week three of the season is simply, we know who we are now. Let's figure this out.
And you see Carr week one, throws three interceptions, two of them in Charger territory in a game they controlled time of possession and yardage-wise in the second half, lose by a score, losing by five. Then you see them come out, and you just laid out all the opportunities they had, in even despite not doing much offensively in the second half. But what was interesting is how the target share there for Devontae Adams, you go from people were critical week one, it was like the only guy he looked at was Adams. Week two, catches for 12 yards. Is that a real concern you have? Is that a real thing with Carr going from all of a sudden he's looking at one guy to, well, now he's just forcing it away from Adams? Is that a real thing?
I think that, you know, the way Vance Joseph decided to play him, he played cover two on the side. He had a guy on top, a guy in his face, and a guy behind him. It's kind of what you should do to Tyreek Hill, too, just by the way of thinking about that.
Would make
so
sense.
They try to take him away. They try to put the ball somewhere else. You know, and so if you do, you know, you got to read it out. You know, part of this, too, is the players have to trust the system, right? The players have to buy into what we're doing here. And Carr's got to buy in, and then the coaches have to buy in. So, you know, this is a work in progress, and I think they will. I mean, I thought Josh Jacobs ran the ball effectively. I think they need to have more of that. I think the second half, they just did not convert a third down in that second half, and that killed them. And the one red zone appearance, they have too many penalties. I mean, look, this game was marred by penalties, 12 on Arizona, 10 by on the Raiders. You know, and the one penalty that wasn't called was a hold when Murray ran in for a touchdown. I don't know how. The one penalty that was called was the illegal contact in the end zone. I don't know. Did you see it? I never saw it, Ben. I never saw that call.
It was almost like, well, the play's going on for like 2 hours, so we almost just feel like we're obligated to throw something. That was kind of my takeaway. It's like
I never saw
play
it.
That long.
You know,
I know. I didn't either.
I didn't see it. So, look, take nothing away from Arizona. I don't think Arizona's a good team after that game. Like, I think there's momentum for Arizona. They're hosting the Rams. But go back and watch what the Rams did to Arizona when they played him in that playoff game. My Lord, they rushed him the right way. Raheem Morris did a great job of making sure that the mayor was in the pocket and he wasn't allowed to get out and make those beat plays like he made against the Raiders. You know, and they were able to move the football effectively against the Cardinal defense, which I think, you know, the Raiders should have done a better job in the second half with their execution. But that's the Raiders' problem right now as we handicap this game. Tennessee and the Raiders are both not executing to the level they need to.
Tennessee, one of nine home dogs this week, looking for maybe some value to be had. Both of those teams 0-2, both straight up and against the number as we go into week number three. You mentioned Arizona as well, who's seen a little bit of money actually in the market. This opened in the four, maybe some 4.5s out there at the start. This is down to 3.5 blanketed pretty much market-wide. And you think about, as you mentioned last year, Kyler Murray in the playoff game, people have made the early narrative on, all right, regression game, or I should say a revenge game for Murray after they were just embarrassed, blown out. The game was over at halftime in the playoffs a season ago. But it's also not like, you know, the Rams have had their early struggles here, get blown out by Buffalo, don't cover against the Falcons, even though they were up 28-3 in that game. How do those two things sort of combine where Arizona, you're not impressed with, but we've seen a Ram team that has come out of the gates a little bit shaky here in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and the betting public isn't. I mean, 11% of the bets this morning are of all the money taken in is on the Rams. They're not getting. Everybody's betting the Cardinals. That line opened at 4.5. It's down to 3.5 now. You know, and I think the sloppiness, and I think the fact that, you know, they kind of have a Super Bowl hangover a little bit, and Stafford certainly does. He's turning the ball over way too much. You know, and their offensive line now losing the left guard, that's a problem. They don't have great depth. I mean, one thing we've talked about all offseason was the ability of the Rams to stay healthy, to not lose players along this journey, to climbing this great mountain to get to a title. And now they start losing it. They have no depth. I mean, when you give away all those draft picks, you don't have depth, you know, so it's hard. Look, no one wants the Rams in this one. It's the line is just shifting so far away from them. I just don't see it. I mean, one game to me doesn't make Arizona. I think they match up well against Arizona.
It's also like, where would this line be if Arizona doesn't complete just an unbelievable comeback?
Great
Wouldn't
question.
This be like 5.5 most likely? Kingsbury would really be on the hot seat if they don't come back in that game with how awful the first six quarters were.
Yeah. I mean, we put everybody, after a loss, everybody goes on the hot seat. It's the most unbelievable thing. This is why I'm off, I can't stand Twitter anymore. Yeah. Like, everybody's getting fired after one loss, you know, like, oh, we're going to fire Josh McDaniels after a game. Like, they cut two games. Like, it's ridiculous. But, you know, look, Kingsbury just signed an extension, FYI. I mean, him, the general manager, and the quarterback are all together.
It's the entourage crew. We talked about it this summer. They're all linked at the hip. Cardinals here, 3.5
Vinny's all set. He's not going anywhere.
No, they're all good to go. Cardinals and Rams divisional matchup this Sunday. One of, again, 9 home dogs for Week 3. Get Michael's thoughts on yet another home dog. Broncos and the Niners. Where is San Francisco at now with Trey Lance out for the season? Garoppolo in at QB. And what do we make of this whole Nathaniel Hackett mess? We'll try to answer those questions for you on the other side here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Horse racing fans, First Bet wants to invite you to enter their free sweepstakes to win a trip to Santa Anita Park on October 6th through the 9th. The grand prize package includes airfare, hotel, tickets to the races, plus a $1,000 betting voucher from First Bet. Head over to VSiN.com/horses to register. As we're back on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, I'm Ben Wilson, back with Michael Lombardi. He's staying away from the Twitter negativity, but you can follow Michael at M. Lombardi NFL. I wish I had as much power and strength as you did, Michael, to stay off the social media. I would love to eliminate it. I can't do it. I'm addicted. What can I say? You know.
I haven't eliminated it, but it's so bad. It's so toxic. I mean, it's just everybody's an expert. They're from their basement. You know. You know, you shouldn't have done this. You know, how can't you run the ball on 4th and 1 from the 1 yard line? Well, what play should you run? Well, that was a dumb play. Okay, well, what play do you have in mind? You know, they got 2 A-gap players sitting in there, you know, and you can't block the one guy. Or that, you know, sneak it. Well, Russell Wilson doesn't want to sneak. You want to go tell him to sneak it? Go ahead. Feel free. He's right over here. You can talk to him. He's making $240 million. Why don't you have a conversation with him? I'm sure he'll do whatever you want him to do.
Of course. That would go over very well. We'll get to the Bronco part of this conversation in a second after what was one of the more ridiculous. You talk about fans, at least from social media. The fans in person, what a crazy scene that was. Chanting down the play clock, trying to help their quarterback and play caller in Denver, because the Broncos do play Sunday night at home in a big spot, second game in 3 weeks in primetime against San Francisco. And we look at this now. Trey Lance leaves in the first quarter with the broken fibula and has the season-ending ankle surgery as well here. That confirmed on Monday with him now being out for the season here. First off, we look at the San Francisco team. You talked about how them keeping Jimmy Garoppolo at first, just as the insurance policy made you a lot more bullish on San Francisco just in general. Where do you set on them now that you have to bring him into the fold right away Week 3 with really zero practice time whatsoever in the preseason and training camp?
Now look, I know they haven't played, they've played 2 quarterbacks that are not very good, right? They played Geno Smith last week and they played Justin Fields the week before, right? So I get that, you know, but this defense for San Francisco is really good. They're fast, they're athletic. They can make plays, and they were, as I wrote about for VSiN.com, they were a very good defense with a very good run game and a below average, a one-dimensional quarterback. And now they have become a team that is a very good defense with a very good running game with an above average quarterback. So as they're after 2 weeks, they're 31st in the National Football League in passing attempts. So they even try to throw the ball, right? They're 29th in yards. That's going to change. But where they are, where they were really high, was they were number one in rushing attempts over 2 weeks. They're number one in rushing attempts, right? And they're fourth in yards. So they're not going to lose that. They're going to keep running the ball. Their defense is really good. I think this is a real hard challenge for Denver. I think Denver is going to have a hard time. And if Russell doesn't move, and so far Russell has been so reluctant to move around the pocket, goes back to what we talked about last year, right? Russell didn't want to move. He only rushed for 183 yards last year. Everybody said, well, it was he's hurt. You know, okay, great. He's hurt, you know, but he's not been able to make the plays when the plays count the most. I mean, they're 24th in points scored in the National Football League after 2 weeks. So, you know, do they get yards? Sure. Yeah, they're getting yards, but are they being able to make some plays? And I don't think he's off to the kind of start that he needs to based on the contract that he just received.
And you think about, too, how this is reflected in the market. We saw Denver open in some shops. I saw one 2.5-point favorite to Denver Sunday night when the books first opened. Flip of favorites. San Francisco now favored by 1.5. Total's interesting when you think about 45.5 to 44.5, and depending on the book you look at. And as you just pointed out, a lot of question marks on the Denver offensive side. And San Francisco second so far through 2 weeks in yards per play allowed. I know you can point to, as you pointed out, Justin Fields, Geno Smith, the quarterbacks they've gone against. But you think about the lack of weapons available for Denver right now. Already the issue and the injury in the preseason to Tim Patrick. We saw Jerry Jeudy exit last week. Not sure of his current status.
Hamler.
KJ Hamler out as well. Quinn Miners.
I don't know where he is, you know?
Yeah, so my question to you, and you mentioned the lack of mobility for Russell Wilson. How do you see Denver moving the ball, if at all, in a game like this, considering the weapons defensively that San Francisco brings you?
Well, I mean, they're going to be able to get some rhythm going. They're going to be able to throw the ball. I mean, but the problem is, can they score? They're 31st in red zone offense this year, partly because they turned down two chances at points against Seattle in a game they should have won. I mean, this is a team that should be 2-0. We're talking about them like they haven't won a game, but they should be 2-0 if they just take the points. But there is some limitations here. And I think the limitations show up. Now, where they're really good is they played good run defense early in the season. Their defense has kind of bailed them out of games. I mean, their defense, they haven't given up a 100-yard rushing game so far. Now, they've only forced one turnover, but they haven't been able to make the play. They've been able to make the plays when they needed to. So, look, I think that's why I think the unders come down. It'll be a lower-scoring game. But I think now with Garoppolo back in there, San Francisco's offense has become two-dimensional. They can run the ball and they can throw it. So that presents a little bit of a different problem for the Denver Broncos defensively, and we'll see, you know, where they are. I mean, they've been very good. But again, Denver, they played against Geno Smith, and they played against Davis Mills. So they haven't played any legitimate quarterback. This will be the best quarterback they play. And then next week, they've got to go to Las Vegas and play the Raiders.
It's already becoming a very telling stretch now for Denver when you think about the struggles early. 0-for-5 scoring touchdowns on goal-to-go situations. All their touchdowns have come from beyond the 20-yard line so far. And it gets into the Hackett piece of this, where, as we talked about last week, you can write off one game as saying, okay, this is a bizarre one-off Monday night game early in the season with a brand-new head coach, new coordinators on both sides of the ball, new special teams coordinator, new quarterback, and a new system. Everything new. Say that word like 15 different times talking about the Broncos in week one. But when you see the same issues, not even close to cleaned up in week two, at home against overall a bottom five roster when you're facing the Houston Texans, you think about Nathaniel Hackett and the whole backstory here that we talked about this way before in the offseason, where he was hired before the ownership change happened in Denver. He was hired with the presumptive thought being prime trade bait or free agent bait to getting Aaron Rodgers. That didn't happen. They go to plan B with Russell Wilson. So even though this is a first-year coach and he's only two games in, are you at the point yet, Michael, thinking this could be a very quickly numbered tenure there for Hackett, even though it's only two games in his first year?
No, I mean, I think you got to give the guy a chance to grow into becoming a head coach, right? I think we're so critical and everybody's so rushed to judgment that, look, what worries me more than anything, if I were the general manager in the Denver Broncos, is his facial expressions. You know, he doesn't elude confidence when the cameras come on him. I don't get the sense he's got full control of what's going on or he's staying one step ahead. I mean, being a head coach is not about the play that's happening. It's the next play. Like, where am I going? It's the chessboard. Where am I moving my pieces to get myself aligned? And I think part of their issue with the red zone is the fact that they have a quarterback who doesn't want to move. I mean, he doesn't want to get hit. I mean, let's put it out there. That's the thing. He just doesn't want to get hit anymore. I mean, he could, you know, he's throwing for a bunch of yards. mean, they're throwing for a bunch of yards, but they when they get their 31st red zone offense, you know, and yet they're seventh in yards gained. I mean, they're one of the best teams throwing the football in the league because he can make some plays when the pocket's clean. So, I mean, I think for Nathaniel, it's just, look, you got to take a step back. We've got to let's handle the job. Give somebody else the play call. Why don't you just manage the game or manage the red zone? Like, you don't have to let everybody know you're not calling the plays. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, why don't you just call the situational plays? You know, that's what when some of the great coaches, Parcells, he didn't call the plays, but it was third and two, he was going to make a call. Or when it was fourth and one at the goal line, he was going to make a call. Same on offense, same on defense. Like, I think that's a little bit what needs to happen.
And you think about the fact they were out of timeouts, what, 8 minute mark to go in the fourth quarter of the game, even though it didn't come back
that's
to,
because,
to bite
you know why that happens, Ben? What happens is he's thinking, I mean, he's thinking about the play call. He's managing the game. The trainer just whispered something in his ear. This guy's out. There's a lot of stuff you're trying to process during a game when you're trying to call the game. And it's a hard thing to do. And so the play clock, it doesn't stop as you try to catch up, right? That's why, what is the job? What isn't it? And the job for him is to be the head coach. And right now, he's not even doing that job well, which is affecting the job that he's trying to do, which is be the offensive coordinator.
And you end up out of timeouts early. You end up the entire stadium chanting the play clock down, trying to help you out. You think, too, on the Javonte Williams front, where they used him a lot out of the backfield as a receiver in week one, but it was single-digit carries, touched it, 15 times as a running back last week. I get that, you know, on the surface, as you pointed out, Broncos seventh in yards per play so far. So the general play calling has not been the issue. However, when you bring up the fact of Wilson's lack of mobility, don't you think getting Williams more ingratiated into the offense more consistently would at least go a long way to helping patch up some of those concerns and some of the warts that we're seeing out of Wilson?
I mean, after two games, Melvin Gordon has 22 carries, so does Devontae Adams. And this is what goes back to my earlier conversation. After two games, we know who we are. Javonte Adams is a blue chip running back. Like, let's get him the ball. Let's get him the ball, and let's make sure he has the ball. And we'll blend Melvin Gordon in. But for them to have the same amount of carries, I don't think that's the right thing.
Yeah, Javonte Williams, 5 yards a carry in week one against the Seahawks easily.
He's averaging 5.8 a carry in a game.
Yeah, at five,
but
five
only
this
50,
past week.
Only 59 yards a game. That's got to change.
We'll see if it changes on Sunday. I don't know how you could have much confidence backing Denver. Big line move to the Niners. Broncos now 1.5 underdog in that Sunday night matchup. We'll see what our guy Harry Gagnon likes on the week 3 card. Harry, 5-1, giving out picks on this show. We'll have Harry join us next on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Start your football season on the right foot by subscribing to VSiN Pro. Get full access to everything we do, including our daily picks at a glance recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, 24/7 video, season prep, including our weekly college and pro football matchup guides, which cover every game, every season, especially for us right now in college and pro football. Pro tools like our exclusive betting splits and pro tips updated every hour with actionable insights to up your betting game. Our Discounted Football Special gives you VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through the Super Bowl, and it's only $175, or you can save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Picks at a glance, like I said, they include all the picks from our guests. And if you've been looking at those, whenever Harry Gagnon comes on the Lombardi Line, Michael, he's been doing well. Two parlays back-to-back have cashed, and his other picks have been really
good.
Oh, the
parlay kid. He loves it. I mean, those parlays are crazy, you know? I mean, he loves it. I don't know how the hell you do it, but you do. I have a hard time just picking winners. But, I mean, Harry, congratulations. Welcome on the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Listen, sometimes we get lucky. Sometimes we get screwed. Like, whoever had the Browns on the money line, listen, I had the Browns on the money line. I was explaining to Ben, Mike, that I had to travel from Orlando down to Melbourne, Florida. So after halftime of the early game, so I didn't even realize what the Browns, last time I checked, it was 30-17, you know, with a minute and whatever change to go. I didn't even realize I lost that one. But I guess on the flip side, on the show last week with you guys, my best play was that Las Vegas-Arizona game, over 51.5. And I guess I should just count count my blessings that that game somehow that game landed 52.
Amazing. Amazing that it worked out that way. Look, and it's funny too. You were on the right side. You had the Chargers catching 4.5. I was the right side the whole way, and then you needed a miracle backdoor with Justin Herbert's rib cage nearly dislodged, it seemed like, down the stretch there. So, it all somehow worked out in roundabout fashion, but that's why betting the NFL drives us crazy at times, and now here we go into a week three with Harry Gagnon. Again, you see him on the Against All Odds podcast with Cousin Sal at AAO Harry, and we look at Thursday night football here. So you're on the Browns. I can't imagine a more devastating loss, and we had a few candidates for devastating losses this week. Browns, though, after that loss, you have the quick turnaround. You now take on Pittsburgh here in a divisional matchup. What's your angle looking ahead to this Thursday night spot?
I know there's probably every reason why to not want to take the Browns here, but I'm going to lay the 4.5. Pittsburgh, 30th in total offense in terms of yards, 30th also in passing. Last year, even though Najee Harris had a nice rookie season, they were still last in the NFL last year in rushing. He's only getting 2.9 yards a carry. No Watt's going to crush Pittsburgh trying to defend the number one running game in the league behind Chubb and Hunt. Those guys got over 300 yards combined so far this season with 4 touchdowns. No, it's a big letdown after what the Browns did. Maybe people are going to back off of them. But I think still here, I'm not sold on Pittsburgh at all. I don't like their offense still. I'm going to lay the 4.5 for the Browns. I think they get back at it. They still have a fantastic defense. And I think offensively, they will do enough. Brissett's been just fine managing this team as well, better than I expected him to. I think the Browns cover the 4.5 on Thursday night.
You know, Harry, I got to say, Brissett hasn't cost them. He's really played well.
Correct.
And they've run the football effectively, and they've done. And Pittsburgh, on the other hand, you know, has not been able to, you know, they've turned the ball over. They forced 5 turnovers in week 1. They don't turn the ball over. They forced 1 last week, and they turn it over twice. To me, that the formula, if you're only going to gain less than 270 yards of offense, you can't turn the ball over. And I thought New England controlled the game in the last 6.5 minutes when they just ran it down Pittsburgh's throat and they didn't get it back. So, you know, to me, this is a game where I think Cleveland can control the pace, can control the tempo, and if they don't turn it over, I think it's going to be hard for – clearly, I think it's going to be hard for the Steelers to cover. I thought this line would be closer to – I predicted, Patrick, on a Monday, I thought it was going to be 5.5.
You know, I could have saw that, definitely, Mike, but I think more than anything, just the way the Browns lost, maybe you had to drop it because they did lose to the Jets, and the way they lost it, I agree. I thought that maybe if they win that game, even if they give up the first touchdown, not the second, even if they give up the first, it's still going to – I agree with you, Mike. Maybe even 5.5, maybe even 6, considering Pittsburgh's offense, the way it's looked, how lethargic it's looked. But still, I think at 4.5 here, I think you're getting the benefit of maybe a point and a half. And I just think overall, Browns pound the ball, running the ball early. They get it done and they cover.
You know what? They put up the graphic late in that game, Harry, while you were traveling. It was like Browns, this will be the first 2-0 start since 93 when Michael was the director of player personnel. Clearly the jinx. So that is still now the case. So, Michael, you still have that last 2-0 start for the Browns when you were with the team in 93. Amazing how that worked.
It's 93. We were a good team. Testaverde was playing quarterback. It all fell apart when he got hurt. That's what happened to us.
Good start. Didn't 7-9 finish there for the Browns at 93. You're looking too, Harry, though, a lot of totals this week, which we're seeing a lot of movement in the betting market on some of these numbers. Green Bay, Tampa, a big mover to the total, and that's still a game, though, that you do feel there's some value on. Tell us why.
I do. I like Tampa. I know it's down to 1.5. I do like the under also, guys, 41.5. I know having no Evans is going to hurt Tampa Bay, definitely. But Brady, 2-0 versus Rodgers in the Tampa Bay uniform. Rodgers' last 2 games in Florida, 4 picks. Somehow, maybe he just doesn't like the humidity down in Florida. I don't know what it is. But Fournette has been looking solid, running the ball for Tampa Bay. He's averaged 100 yards total per game so far. But it's more than anything, I think, Michael, I think maybe you'll agree here. It's the Tampa Bay defense is where the Bucs have been shining. They've allowed just 13 points. They have 6 turnovers, 10 sacks. Jamel Dean, 2 picks has been fantastic. And again, like I said, I like this game, the game under Green Bay, just 10 second half points this season. And aside from the 21 points they scored in the second quarter versus Chicago on Sunday night, the other seven quarters combined, just 13 total points scored by the Packers. They didn't thrill me on Sunday night either. I like this game to go under 41.5, and I think Tampa, again, pulls this game out basically because of their defense.
And, you know, they forced six turnovers in the last two games. I mean, you know, and I think that's ultimately what you want to be able to do. And you force turnovers, you don't allow the other team to get first downs. They're second in the league in allowing the minimum amount of first downs. So, yeah, I think that's been the key. Is they try, both teams have to live with their defense, and I think that's what we're saying by playing the under. Yep. The Packers have to live early in the season with their defense, which is good enough. And they've got to, and so does Tampa Bay, as they try to work their way through finding enough skill players around their great quarterbacks to make them happy.
At third and yards for play against, too, Tampa Bay. We're at 4.2 right now, only San Francisco and Buffalo better so far up through the 2 weeks. I want to get to one of your other totals, Harry, and then we'll get to your teaser, maybe a parlay you got as well for us. But Eagles, Commanders, what do you like here?
Boy, I'll tell you what, this is probably, guys, my best play of the weekend. Like I said last week, the Las Vegas, Arizona total was my best. This week, I like Philadelphia, Washington, over 47 points. Philly was first in rushing last year. They're second this year. They're first in total yards after 2 weeks. They're averaging 31 points per game. A.J. Brown is the real deal. He's been fantastic. Him and Devontae Smith are finally having a 1-2 combo that Philadelphia can be proud of. First time they've had that in about 10 years, that where they've had a duo that's been so talented. And let's not just forget about what Washington's 1-1, and Wentz has 7 touchdown passes. He's gone to five different receivers on this Commanders team have 80 yards receiving or more. Jahan Dotson's been a fantastic pickup, what they got in the first round from Penn State. He's got 3 touchdowns this season already as a rookie. I love this game to go over 47. And again, we've discussed this before. I love what Hurts does when he runs the ball. He may not be the best running quarterback in the NFL. Maybe I still give that to Lamar Jackson, but he might be the smartest running quarterback in the NFL because he knows when he's already picked up the first down, he's already got 12 yards. Maybe he can get another 3-4. He knows when to go out of bounds. He knows how to handle his body. He handles the angles beautifully when he goes to the corners and takes off running. I think that keeps drives alive. I love the over 47.
You know, the last time they played, the Eagles were dominating. I mean, they ran the ball 41 times for 238 yards. Garrett Gilbert was the quarterback for the Washington football team. Remember that game? And so, I just think the way they're playing defense, Washington, I mean, they can't stop anybody. I mean, this has been going on now. I mean, they're terrible. And if you watch Wentz play the first, they were last year. And you watch Wentz play in the first half last week, he was terrible too. And then the second half, when the game was out of reach, he got his yards. I think you're right. I think both teams will move the ball. But I like Philly. I think Philly's hard to play.
And then in 30 seconds, Eric, what do we got? Teaser, parlay, where are we going this week?
Here, how about this? How about the 7-point teaser? Let's take Atlanta up to +8.5 against the Seahawks. Rookie Drake London looked good last week. Kyle Pitts really needs to get going. Hasn't really started, but I'm taking more than a touchdown against Seattle. And how about Rams and Cardinals? Over 42. Rams defense after 2 weeks giving up 29 points a game. Arizona and Kyler Murray finally got their offense rolling in the fourth quarter versus Las Vegas. In 11 of 12 last meetings between these two guys, somebody has scored 30 or more points in 11 of the 12 games. Give me over 42 in the Rams, Cards, and Atlanta +8.5 on the 7-point.
Stay hot, Harry. Thanks as always.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. We're back for the final time on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson. Patrick Maher rejoins us tomorrow. And thanks as well to our entire crew. Matt Santos, our producer behind the glass. Andrew Ingold leading the charge, our technical director. And we were just talking, Michael, Philadelphia, Washington with Harry Gagdon last segment.
Yeah.
I wonder from your perspective, this line is now ticked up to 6.5, juice to the favorite. We've seen a couple books now touch 7. Is there a point where this gets a little bit out of hand for you with the Eagles going to Washington on a short week?
Well, I mean, look, we can play. Remember, there was a thing, you're way too young to remember this, but in the newspapers before we had internet, you know, back in Bill Dady's day covering the Chicago, they had this thing called the Dunkel ratings, right? So, and they would rate all the teams. And so what would happen is if Team A played Team Y and they had a common opponent, you would get a Dunkel rating, right? So we know the Eagles played Detroit and really killed them. This, you know, it was a closer game than the score actually ended up. And we know Washington played Detroit and got killed, right? And they both played them in the same surface. They both played them in Detroit. So when you're weighing that, you're saying, okay, Wentz looked really bad in the first half of that game. You know, he didn't, you know, he played good at moments against the Jags, but he made the same mistakes he typically does. And the Eagles have been flawless in 2 weeks. So I don't think it surprises me at all when you look at the numbers. I'm just seeing here on my board here, I had this as a 7.86 game. Based on numbers, coaching, and all this, I think to me, do I think the, would I take, I'd have a, I played Washington last week on Chris Russo like an idiot. That'll be the last time I play Washington. Trust me.
Famous last That'll words be the last, I have, for Michael Lombardi.
I have no confidence in their coaching staff. I have zero confidence, less confidence. I have no confidence in the staff. I have less confidence on the defensive staff. I mean, they can't stop anybody. You know, and really Jacksonville had a chance to beat them if they would have gone. If Jacksonville would have taken the points in the red zone and kicked and made field goals, they would have won the game. So, like for me, will I take Philly? Probably not. I think 7 in a divisional game on the road's hard.
At the same time,
I think that's hard to cover.
The teaser possibilities here, and
I don't play teasers. I mean, I don't bet anything but I don't give out recommendations of teasers. I think that's kind of like okay, like I don't. To me, my life has been handicapping football teams when I was in the league. I'm doing nothing different today than I did for 35, 37 years in the league. It's just that we're talking about a number that nobody talked about. To me, Washington can't stop a running game. And Washington hasn't been able, under Jack Del Rio, to stop this Oklahoma style of offense that Philadelphia runs. And if you try to go with the Ed Donatell program, which is what they did last week, which is okay, we're going to play soft. We're going to let these guys catch the ball in front of us, and we're going to tackle and get them. That Hurts was too accurate for that. So you're going to have to limit that. You're going to have to change that. I mean, last time they played, I know there was the COVID, and I know it was Garrett Gilbert and all that, but they played them twice, right? And, you know, they in both games, they couldn't stop them. I mean, the Eagles scored. It was at the second game down at Philly, excuse me, the second game in Washington was 20-16. It was closer than that, but it was at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And you look at what Washington's done, whatever you want to say about perceived improvements for Jacksonville and all the hype that we've seen in the summer with Hard Knocks in Detroit, the reality is Washington has given up 6.6 yards per play in back-to-back weeks against Trevor Lawrence at home and Jared Goff. That kind of tells the story, and now you face an Eagle team up now to -225 to win the division, Michael, for +150 or so in the preseason. And if you're buying in Jalen Hurts being a legitimate top-end quarterback in the league, it makes the task that much tougher, especially when you think about how multidimensional they are. So I get where your 7.8 spread comes from. And now the question is, do you buy Philly at this point to run away with a division where the odds makers have them penciled in as a pretty clear favorite here at -220?
Yeah, I definitely buy. I think Philly's the best team. I think Philly's one of the best teams in the NFC. I think so, it's going to be hard to beat Philly. Now, what's going to happen is what Todd Bowles did to Philly in the playoff game. When you make Hurts have to throw the ball in tight man coverage where you can control him in the pocket. See, Minnesota couldn't control him in the pocket. And as Megan Payton said on the air, he didn't run as much, but they didn't have to. And they took away A.J. Brown, but then they got the ball to Waddle. So, to me, this is a tough team to play. This is a really tough team to play. And I think that knowing the way Washington is and the way Hurts is, you know, Washington has really good skill. One of the reasons behind my logic, and it proved to be wrong, of taking Washington against Detroit was I liked Washington's skill players. I really do. I like Samuels. You mentioned Dotson. Harry mentioned Dotson. I think he's been really good. McLaurin's good. The tight end Logan Thomas is good. The offensive line in week one was good. In week two against Detroit, we saw Aiden Hutchinson go crazy. It wasn't good at all. Gave up a safety. Mm-hmm. The left tackle, Leno, didn't play very well. The right tackle didn't play well. So that's got me a little worried because Philly, if they're going to be aggressive, which is what they looked like last week against Minnesota, they were aggressive. They forced three turnovers. You know, they stopped Dalvin Cook from running the football. If they do that and play aggressively, we're going to find out if they can hold up at the secondary.
And you think about how this relates to the futures market and how I see it for Philadelphia as well. If you're a believer in them long-term and all the points you lay out, Michael, and from what we've seen so far makes us believe, yes, we believe in Philadelphia, it makes sense to get ahead of this trade now, even though you've missed the best number here, to get in on them at minus 220 or 225 before they face a team where they're favored by 7 and highly expected to just win the game outright. We're forgetting spreads here for a second. You get in on them now, this is a number to win the division that could easily be north of 250 by next week. Becomes really tough to at least contextualize and feel like, okay, I'm now able to lay such a massive price. I would say if you like Philadelphia long-term and you know, all the points you lay out, Michael, lead me to believing in that, take a shot at them right now before you have a game against a Washington team that has a lot of issues they're trying to deal with at home. To me, that's the sensible play here if you're looking to still get involved in these in-season futures markets.
Yeah, I think to me, I would lean towards representing. I think the East market probably isn't a good enough price to win the East because I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
They're the best team in the East, even though, you know, people might say, hey, let's play with New York because they're off to a 2. To me, I think if you think the Eagles can represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, which everybody that I come in contact at the Wawa here in Ocean City, they all think so. They've already celebrated it, so why not just go ahead with it? But they will be good at, if they stay healthy, they can be good enough at the end because Hurts took a step for me last week in the sense that he threw the ball with some rhythm and some timing. Now, I'm not sold on it 100%, but it was much better than it's ever been.
And up to a plus 450 now, second favorite to win the NFC. It's more just the general principle, too. We're talking about, and it's our VSiN pro tip of the hour. There's a team you're really bullish on and you like them long term, and the market is probably going to move if they're big favorites, heavily favored in a spot upcoming. That's the time you can jump in on them to avoid having to play them in later weeks at a much worse number. Again, all of our VSiN pro tips are available on the website, VSiN.com/pro tips for our subscribers, sorted by show and by sport. And look, you talk about the Cowboys and the Giants, Michael. We'll get ourselves out of here on this. You're seeing the Giants once again, home favorites here against Cooper Rush and the Cowboys. Where do you handicap this matchup early on? As we're obviously a few days away, but that's the Monday night game.
I mean, I think Dallas, even with Cooper Rush, should be favored. I don't see how New York's going to block him. I really don't. I think Daniel Jones will turn the ball over. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. I think Daniel Jones will turn the ball over. I think it's a great story Monday night, but I think Dallas will struggle to move the ball, and I think the Giants will struggle to move the ball against both these teams. The Giants didn't protect very well last week. They just avoided making mistakes, and you know, and that's one of the areas where Carolina has been disappointing this year. Carolina hasn't been able to really get the quarterback to make a mistake. They haven't forced a turnover in 2 weeks. It's one of the reasons they haven't won a game.
Yep.
So they got to change that.
How about Mike McCarthy being aggressive, going for it on fourth downs in his own territory? When we turn the clock back 15 years on McCarthy, it was wild to watch.
Well, you know, look, you can't play. You don't have the quarterback. You got to play differently. You got no other choice. You got to have to find a way to win the game. That's the job of a head coach. What are the circumstances? What do I have to work with? Yeah. How do I win?
It's funny. I always remember Aaron Rodgers' first year as starter, game against Peyton Manning and the Colts. McCarthy was super aggressive, too, way back when it was viewed he had the quarterback disadvantage. kind of comes full circle. Rush against Dalton, and here he is going for fourth downs, and it works out for the Cowboys in an upset home win. I might have to go down on the ship once again, Michael. I bet on the Giants the first 2 weeks. I might be against them again this week, kind of like you are.
That's yep, no doubt. I mean, I think, you know, well, keep going with it. People are going to keep going with these teams. Right. Eventually, they're going to hit for you, right?
I would. In my case, I would at least hope so. Great being on with you, Michael, as always. Patrick back on the show tomorrow. That's some great stuff, Michael. And we'll have VSiN Big Bets coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.